Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. I want to say right up front, I am not up to the task of summing up everything that happened this weekend, Jeffrey.
I don't think there's any way you can.
There's no possible way. So, well, let's just admit this show will be a failure on the front end because there is no. It did just strike me as all this stuff is happening. I'm like, wait, we have a whole day of NFL now tomorrow, like, and in that day of NFL, we're going to have a tie between the Chiefs and Packers to end the weekend at 40-40. And we're going to be looking at baseball playoffs featuring Guardians and Tigers and Red Sox and Yankees. And we're going to have a Ryder Cup that was an absolute wipeout, and then it wasn't. And we're going to – it just was – and then the whole – the every. College football started Friday.
Correct.
Friday night was total bedlam.
We had two unbelievable games.
Friday. The weekend, Jeffrey was telling me, telling you all week long last week that this was going to be the best weekend in sports. And I was slightly, the way I tend to be, negative. And not negative, but skeptical that it could be better than Super Bowl weekend. How could it be better? It's the Super Bowl. But my God.
It delivered.
Holy smokes. Did it deliver? And that's why I tell you right up front that there's not a chance that we will be able to do an adequate job today. So build into my excuse right up front. We'll try to do it. And the way we'll do it is we'll have the fight song roundup in the next segment when we will. But again, even that, Jeffrey, not a chance. We play five songs and we blow up one. Are there not more than five teams that deserve
100%? And there's also definitely more schools that deserve blowing up.
More than one that deserves to be blown up. But we're not up to the task. But we'll try. We'll do that in the next segment. Chris Harrington, he's in town. He was contemplating coming in here. But here's the thing. Media Day starts at 11. And we're here at the, you know, we're a good, what do you say, 20, 25 minutes from downtown?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And so if you're here at 10, it cuts a little close. And so Chris decided to be relaxed and join us by phone. But it'll be a local call now. It will not be a long-distance call from the Twin Cities. Chris is here for Grizzlies Media Day. We'll talk to him. And then at some point, we'll try to get to the NFL and everything else that did happen along the way. Before anything else. In addition, by the way, today's the day we're supposed to be seeing the troops arrive. Not in the National Guard necessarily, but we're going to see an influx. Forgot how Sam Hardiman reported on it at the Daily Memphian, how it was worded. I think that broke Friday. That today is the day. We're here, and we'll see what that looks like. So that is happening. But then in addition, we had a couple of deaths over the weekend of note. Myron Lowry, who filled in as mayor after Mayor Harrington resigned, he passed away over the weekend. He, of course, he was a former TV guy who served for a long time on city council. And then the moment that everyone is remembering was when he fist bumped the Dalai Lama.
Yep.
And said,
we saw lots of that clips going around.
And said, hello, Dolly. And it was a little bit of a mixed reception when he did that. There was some thought that was disrespectful. I thought it was fine. I thought he, and here's the thing. The Dalai Lama was amused. He did not, First of all, I don't think it's the first time anyone said hello. Dolly,
yeah, I'm going
to
go on a limb. And that's but probably not the first time he's heard the joke.
Maybe it's a little bit like doing a Toto joke in Kansas.
Sure.
Right? And so, but maybe internally the Dalai Lama was rolling his eyes. But
did the band Toto ever play in Kansas?
Don't know the answer to that, but I presume. But a life of service to the city of Memphis, and he passed away. Thoughts to his family. And then closer to home, Larry Ray died. Larry was, I was talking to my friend Zach McMillan about this last night. And of course, he did the radio show here.
Yep.
The outdoor show here. But Larry, when I got to the CA in 96, Larry was the outdoors writer. But he had been the prep writer for years and years and years and years before that. And Zach and I were talking about this, and the way Zach phrased it is that Larry probably touched more lives with his writing than anyone over the last 50 years in Memphis. Because, listen, I'll be down there today at Grizzlies Media Day, and I'll be writing about Ja Morant, right? What Larry wrote about was, for decades, the kid who caught a touchdown pass, the kid who scored a goal in soccer, the pitcher who threw a three hitter, all of that. The whole key to writing about preps is being everywhere, knowing everyone, and getting everyone's name in the paper.
Yep.
That's
and having a very deep phone of people that will call you to make sure that
people
you
can, who trust you.
Correct.
And Larry was out there and he did that, and among other things. He and John Ganazzo started the Best of the Preps ceremony at the CA, which was to recognize high school athletes and coaches, and became a really big deal. And again, it was lifting up people who don't necessarily always get the spotlight shown on them. And so then when he stopped being the prep writer, and that's a hard gig to leave, because once you're good at it, no one wants you to stop, because you're good at it, you know everybody, and it is really hard. But once he stopped being the prep writer, what did he do? He became the outdoors writer. And so instead of writing about the kid who threw the three hitter, or the girl who scored the key goal in soccer, he was writing about the guy who caught the big bass. You know, he was who bagged the giant deer, or who, like, the places. It was, again, it was a whole universe of people. Just think about the outdoors in the Mid-South. A whole universe of people who don't necessarily get their names in the paper otherwise. And Larry was doing that. And there, just like in the world of preps, he did the Best of the Preps ceremony. Here, he took over which was a fixture in this town forever, the Fishing Rodeo. Also was sponsored by the CA, the Fishing Rodeo. And it was just an unbelievable deal, where you would get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kids out there fishing. And he and Bill Dance did it. And again, Larry touched. And then here's the thing. After he left the CA, he didn't put his feet up. He just wanted to keep telling stories. And so he and I'm sure Brad Carson could talk endlessly about what he did here at Odyssey, because then he just started telling, then he just had more stories to tell. He was working basically until the day he died telling stories. And anyone, the other thing about Larry is anyone will tell you that he was a man of profound, deep faith. He never, Bobby Hall, who was a colleague of mine at the CA as well, he said when things would get really hot, and, you know, reporters can use some salty language. And the most Larry would ever say was cowabunga. That was about it. And then at the end of one of these nights, you'd be in there on a Friday night, when back then we would, you know, cover 32 prep games. You'd have people calling in scores. You'd have people, and someone had to type them up, the game stories. You'd have other people come driving in from Germantown to type in their story, or driving in from Orange Mound to type in their story. And you'd have whatever, all these game stories, trying to get into the 17 different editions of the newspaper back then. And Larry was always, you know, I say, this is real newspapering. This is real newspapering. And he was a real newspaper man, was Larry Ray. As more and more of the my old colleagues from the CIA pass away, it's one of the sadnesses is that the place where we worked, and I don't mean that the CIA is still there and there's still people doing good work, but that the entity that was the CIA, the big municipal newspaper that covered everything and that everyone read and whatever, it is no longer. And people like Larry, who just reveled in real newspapering, are a vanishing breed. He was absolutely one of the hardest working, dogged, nicest, and most impactful journalists that we've had in this city, over the last five decades. And he passed away over the weekend. My thoughts to Miriam and all who loved Larry. And that is a big, big, big list of folks who loved Larry. So thoughts to Larry Ray. All right, Jeffrey, we did have before we get to football, we did have, and both Chris and Drew have been telling us this was coming. We had the Grizzlies injury news dump.
Indeed, on Friday. Yeah.
And so Sed Coward is full go.
Yep.
That's good news, right?
Yep.
Zach Edey is 6 to 9 weeks.
I viewed it as a positive.
So what's that? Right now, this is the last week of September, right?
Yeah, we counted it up. Hang on. I want to.
You did the math here?
Yeah, but I've already forgotten.
So this gets you, 6 weeks basically gets you halfway into November.
Yes. And right. The question was, it was the way that they worded it. Like, it's like cleared for action or something like that. It was the way that they worded it to where if you thought in that 6 to 9 week time at the end of the 9 weeks that he could actually play basketball, then to me it was like, okay, like you were looking in like November-ish.
I will tell you how they worded it because I have it here in front of me. Zach Edey, who underwent surgery to address laxity in his left ankle on June 7. I hate the laxity in the left ankle. Has been cleared to begin ramping up basketball activities. That's good. He's been cleared now to begin ramping up basketball activities. He's expected to return to play in 6 to 9 weeks. If that's what's expected, not reevaluated, not whatever. He will expected to play in 6 to 9 weeks.
Right. So that would be sometime around the last, like the week of Thanksgiving.
I take that.
Yes, absolutely.
That's earlier than we expected. That's good news, right?
Oh, I mean, I'd braced myself for January 1 thinking that was the...
So far, so good.
Yes, I agree.
Jaren Jackson Jr., who underwent a procedure to repair a turf toe injury in his right foot on July 2nd, has been cleared to begin ramping up basketball activities.
Also good.
He's expected to return to play in 4 to 6 weeks.
Roughly the start of the season.
Very roughly. It makes me think he will not be there in opening day.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to be like a month into the season.
Well, so far you'd take this, right?
Yes. Everything so far, I would say thumbs up.
You take it and applaud it. Give them credit. They led with the bad news. Brandon Clark has fully healed from a high-grade right PCL sprain that was sustained on March 19th. Isn't that good?
Yeah.
No, we have to keep reading. However, in connection with recent off-season training, he has experienced right knee synovitis. You with me on that pronunciation?
I think that's how I said it too.
Which will require an arthroscopic procedure to address. His return to play timeline will be announced following the procedure, but a full recovery is expected.
Of course.
All right. Let me ask you this. If you had been given this press release before it was released, and they said, you take this one, or we give you what's behind door number two. Is this more bad than good? I think it's more bad than good. But you think it's more good than bad?
Because
you think the Zach Edey timeline is more positive than the Brandon Clark news
yes.
is negative.
And also baked into that, though, is I didn't feel great about the Brandon Clarke thing because instead of surgery for the PCL, he went and did the, you know, basically goes over to Europe and gets the experimental surgery or whatever shot, which never is that encouraging to me.
Okay. We'll talk with Chris Harrington about that straight up at 10 o'clock. All right. Onward to college football. We have too much to get to, man. We got too much to get to. How did you make it through the weekend, by the way? And I, by the way, did not feel like your wagering went the best ever this weekend.
6-5-1.
Is that true?
Yeah.
God, so many of the high-profile games were going the other way. Like, you went with Penn State.
Yeah. I told you. We baked that in that was going to be wrong.
Good for you, man. All right. Well, good. Even the weeks that feel bad turn out to be good. Let's start with the University of Memphis. Memphis, in the end, rolls 55-26. 24 unanswered points. Absolutely lit it up in the fourth quarter. Did not yet in the top 25. They're 26 in the coaches' poll, the equivalent of. They're 29th, essentially, in the AP poll, still behind South Florida in the AP poll. But a lot to like in this one. DeRozier, 240 yards, 3 touchdowns, including a 90-yard run. That's the longest since Herb Covington. You remember that.
Of course.
In 1966. Braham was massive again, 6 catches, 127 yards. And Brandon Lewis, 196 yards, 2 touchdowns. Got blasted on that strip sack, but got up. I'll tell you, the thing that impressed me most was that. It was because we know they can run the ball, right? Like, one week it's Sutton Smith, this week it's DeRozier. Like, it's like we know they can run the ball. What impressed me was twice when it looked like, this is getting a little close. You had Brandon Lewis hitting big shots down the field, including right after that strip sack comes back and boom. I was impressed. Like, to me, the question about the ceiling of this team has always been, okay, how good is Brandon Lewis going to be actually chucking the ball when he has to? And I was impressed.
Yeah, I'm with you. I still think the bigger deal to me is, like, they can just run the ball just on about anybody. Like, it's another game where sack-adjusted rushing, 314
it's
yards,
crazy.
seven and a half yards a carry.
This is like Ryan Silverfield's dream
yes,
team.
They can just run the ball at will.
So they roll. And were you ever concerned on their behalf?
I didn't love the vibe in the first half when they were trailing and you have that empty stadium in Boca where it's right. Just like, oh, this is sleepy. And like, do you fall into the trap? You just had the big win. But in the second half when they came out and like reasserted control, I was never worried that they were going to lose. If you were somebody that had bet the Tigers, I was like, okay, I can see where this would be a sweat for you.
Tigers roll 55-26. They got Tulsa next. That's going to be a night game at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. Tulsa's terrible, although did beat Oklahoma State.
Correct. And they kept it frisky with Tulane in the first half.
It's interesting. I do think the conference is tough. Another team that we really haven't talked about, Navy.
No, I think I said this to Munns last week. The league is better in football than I had anticipated the last couple of years, and basketball, it's so much worse.
And why is that?
I don't have a great answer other than maybe the...
I mean, because it's easier to be good in basketball because there's just fewer players to pay, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's when you look at the teams that you've added, they have been better basketball. I mean, they've been better football teams. And then you added Army and Navy, who've been very credible.
There's limitations how good.
Right, but they've been very solid programs. And then on the
but like, why should Tulane? Tulane is a classic that always was better at basketball than football, right?
Yep.
And Tulane, like a poor man's Duke. Like, you can be really good in basketball without paying a whole bunch, with just a couple players. why has Tulane turned out to be a better football school than basketball school?
I think because
people are prioritizing it.
Well, I think, A, there's definitely an element of, hey, teams think like the path to moving up is
for the same reason
football.
That Memphis is prioritizing. Correct. It. So, they're prioritizing.
So you're prioritizing it. But also, I think they have had a lot more success at getting Louisiana guys that went somewhere else, it didn't work out, having a home there. Like, they've had more success doing that in football, whereas in basketball, if you have somebody that goes somewhere and it doesn't work out, they go to, like, another P5.
Locally, in addition, we have, we got Vanderbilt killing it, and now we got Vanderbilt and Alabama coming up, which will be just fantastic. And then we had Ole Miss with the big win, Tennessee with the thrilling win, a narrow escape, however you want to phrase that, and then you had Arkansas firing its coach. Let's start there.
Okay.
Sam Pittman. Well, the interesting thing about Sam Pittman is, A, he's gone, but B, they didn't hang around and wait for him to lose a couple more games. He is 29 and 27 in conference, He is since 2021, he is 29 and 27. And in order to save a whole bunch of money, they could have waited till he was no longer above 500.
Right.
So you could have waited for him to lose two more games and you would not have had to pay $9.8 million. They were not willing to do that. He is canned after a 56-13 loss to Notre Dame, and Bobby Petrino elevated into the interim role.
And Bobby's firing the whole defensive staff.
Because
he does view this as an audition. He is, again, I think...
Should he not view it as an audition?
100%. It's probably his last chance to get an SEC job.
So our friend Dan Wolkin basically tweeted out, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't be tempted, don't do it, don't do it. This will end badly. What do you think the chances are that Bobby Petrino can get the job? And how good or bad an idea do you think it would be?
I still think he's a really good football coach. I just think their biggest problem, I don't think it's so much their scheme on defense. I don't think their scheme's helping them on defense, but their biggest problem on defense is they just don't have athletes. And to me, defense has always been size, strength. It's the dudes more than anything. So you look at it, they could have, I think they would have to they'd have to win four games. And
you mean for there to be enough momentum?
Right. I think they'd have to get to a bowl game to do that. And I don't know if their roster is going to allow for that.
Well, who would you hire? Here's the truth. Every single list, it feels like to me, starts with Alex Golish. And I'm going to tell you
something. Well, theirs is a different one.
He can't be the coach at every single school.
So theirs is a little different, though. Have you seen who's involved? The man that just traded Micah Parsons and Rhett Lashley.
Oh.
Local boy. I believe he played at Arkansas. That's the question. Now, here's the question, though, for Lashley. You'll probably get a bigger payday at Arkansas, but you definitely probably have a better path to the playoff in this version of the ACC. Now, the question is, how long does that last? I do not know the answer to that. I don't think anyone can realistically know the answer to that. But I do think
it's one of these questions of why would you take it if
probably $70 million.
Well, this is last week when we were talking about this, you have to look under the hood. Right.
Right.
So, and we were talking about this with Ryan. Would Ryan jump from Memphis, where he has among the most resources in conference, to a school where he is among the least resources in the conference? And so why do you do that? The reason you do it, twofold. There's only two reasons to do it. One, the paycheck, right? That's one reason to do it. Two, you get some assurances that, no. We are going to see a truckload of money. And we have seen Texas Tech, other places, that if you have a truckload of money, the fact that you have forever been at the bottom doesn't mean you will forever be there.
Like, there is upward mobility.
Is the most money.
This is the an actual moment in time of upward mobility.
All you need is the most money. And it's hard to have the most money, but you can have a lot of money. All you need is crazy ass crazy ass boosters who are willing to pay the most money.
Truth is, all he really needs one if he has enough. It's what Miami's doing. Forget Texas Tech. Miami laid the blueprint with John Ruiz.
So I guess you do it if you're getting a big enough paycheck.
Yep.
And then if you're reassured that there's enough money going to go into your roster.
Yes.
And we're seeing, by the way, you know what? Virginia's another example of this. Virginia has been down for how long? Ever.
Yeah.
They had a great transfer portal year. They had a great, including the quarterback, right?
Yep.
And all of a sudden they're beating FSU. Like this is not a deal where anymore, like, we can say that the system's terrible and toxic and everything else, and we hate it and whatever else. But you know what you can do? You can flip your team.
You can change your circumstances
in an off season.
Yep.
And so, do the same people who are motivated to pay John Calipari what they pay John Calipari, or the same fan base that is motivated, are they going to be motivated to do what has to be done in Arkansas?
I mean, that's the question. A lot of times, what it is are they motivated if you get their guy?
There is a lot of, you know, we were in Little Rock over the weekend, and I was explaining, Claire was asking me, who do people root for here? It's just Arkansas. Like, there's nothing else. And so you have you've got a lot of corporate. You got Tyson. You got Walmart. Like, there's plenty of money in Arkansas, and it's all going to Arkansas.
Yep.
You know?
And it's designed as such.
And so, who knows? All right. We'll talk about Ole Miss and Tennessee on the other side when we do the fight song roundup. We'll do that next. My God, it is a busy day here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. It's that time again. Let's do the fight song roundup. Memphis Tigers win 55-26. They've now got a 9-game winning streak, Jeffrey.
Does help that we've added.
Tulsa can make it 10.
Like it also helps that we've added the playoffs, so teams that more teams are taking losses to end the year.
That is true.
But
that is true. They also have increasingly that the teams with the longest home winning streaks,
right,
lost. And so Memphis, I think, is at 13 there. Is that right? And Georgia was at 33 and lost. Washington was at 22 and lost. I think it's Oregon now at 18.
Yeah, it definitely helped that Georgia lost, because Georgia's had not lost at home until this decade until Saturday.
It's impressive. It's all still right there in front of them. They avoided the...
They control their own destiny.
They enjoyed the hiccup, and they very clearly control their own destiny. And not only that, they look good.
Yes. You know,
this running game looks like it's something that they should be able to count on every single week. So, shout out to the Memphis Tigers. All right, onward we go. Well, they did it. Now up to 4. Ole Miss beats LSU 24-19. Chambliss terrific again, 23-39, 314 yards. And they hold LSU, which you knew LSU couldn't run the ball, and they couldn't run the ball. Just 59 rushing yards. Your thoughts, Jeffrey?
Jeff, in the SEC now where it feels like a lot of these rosters are fairly similar, it feels like it's becoming kind of diet NFL or NFL light. And if you think about oftentimes what ends up deciding NFL games, it's usually situational football. How did you execute? Ole Miss, at the end of the half, they had an opportunity to kick a field goal or go for it on fourth down and get a touchdown. They end up going for it. They get the touchdown. They get a two-score lead. They had a bad interception, and that's another moment where it's like, okay, you could give up a touchdown here and let that game get into it, but it's like everyone that's screaming at their TV, hold them to three.
Hold them to three.
Hold them to three,
well,
and did
it. And then the fourth and three was just, you know.
Downs in general. Third down, Ole Miss
goes. Fourth and three, wide open. Yeah. It was a beautifully drawn up.
Well, rights make plays.
Rights do make plays. Yes, Daquan Wright with the conversion and the crowd goes crazy. To your point, by the way, I saw recent SEC title odds. It's nuts. This is according to SP Plus. Ole Miss's title odds chances 16.3%, and that leads the way.
Yes.
That leads the way. Missouri, 12.9%. Oklahoma, 11.1%. Alabama, 11.1%. Vandy, how about that? 9.7%. Texas, 8.5%. Tennessee, 7.2%. Texas A&M, 6.2%. Georgia, 5.2%. LSU, 5.2%. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 teams. Between 5 and 16% to win the title. It's nuts. Is this good?
Well, I think they'll tell you, let's see, like, when we get to the playoff. Like, if this ends up
I think it's good. Like, all those fan bases are entertained.
I agree with you from a bigger picture, but if this ends up costing them another playoff spot, then they're going to try to figure out some way around this.
Well, they might go to the whole Big Ten automatic.
Right, and that's
qualifier.
Not what I want. I actually like the 12-team playoff. I think if you get a spot in the 12-team playoff, I think you actually earned something. I do not think we left out a national title team. We still kept people interested all through November. It had all the makings of what I wanted. When you start getting into just the made-for-TV stuff, it just starts to feel like soulless and hollow.
So how good is Ole Miss?
So I do not think Ole Miss is anywhere remotely as good as they were on defense last year, but I do think they have one key difference. This year, they can actually run the football. Because while I have no idea about LSU's offense, like they might
the
just be a
bit salty. We knew that.
We knew their defense was good, and Ole Miss moved the football. I mean, Ole Miss put up 480 yards. None of that was fluky.
It's a fun game.
It was a really fun game.
It was
for
a really fun game. And came right down to that fourth and three call. So shout out to Ole Miss fans out there celebrating today. Who's next?
It wasn't easy.
It was not easy. It is kind of amazing that it took that. Like two defensive touchdowns. If you look at yards per play, Tennessee 6.5 to 4.4.
Yep.
You know, so, but this was one where I mean, Tennessee, I felt bad for the Mississippi State fans in the end, but Tennessee just couldn't let this slip away. They just couldn't. They not another one, you know?
Yeah, I thought the right team won.
I think the right team won.
But I do think both teams were making such critical errors that you left it open to getting beat. But I just felt like overall, like if the longer the game went on, the more advantage Tennessee had.
So how good's Tennessee?
I want to see Tennessee with the secondary intact and back healthy because I did think this was going to be a pretty good test because they were able to put pressure on the backup secondary and hit the big plays. I think Tennessee's about like a lot of these teams in the SEC. And it's going to come down to how many one-score games do they win. And here's one that you could have lost and you didn't. So are you plus one?
That is it. Here is one you could have lost and you didn't.
On the road.
You already did lose one that you could have won and you didn't. You can't lose one like
right.
this. It is amazing, though. Like, let's go through this again. These are 10 teams between 16 and 5% chance of winning the conference. Ole Miss, Missouri, Oklahoma, Alabama, Vandy, Texas, Tennessee, Texas A&M, Georgia, and LSU. Who do you have a conviction about?
None. Because, like, I have a real problem with Georgia's front on defense.
No, Georgia doesn't look like the Georgia defense of old.
Like,
of old.
They were not getting pressure for much of the night.
No.
And they haven't gotten pressure all year. That's not like, it's not, I don't want this to.
No, this Georgia defense is not the same.
It's just not. It's good, but it's not dominant.
And Gunnar Stockton was fine.
Yeah.
He's not transcendent by any stretch. And so, I mean, we'll get to them in a minute. But I mean, I don't know. Like, is Alabama as good as any of these teams?
Alabama's
is hang on for dear life in the end.
But I think Alabama's very much in this conversation. Like, my problem is there's no one that's head and shoulders
there
better.
There is no one that is head and shoulders
Because to
better.
Me, the only team that had a chance to be head and shoulders better has a quarterback that is having to pump himself up by walking over Sam Houston State defenders.
That was really embarrassing.
I was fine
what
with
was that.
I was fine hell? With him we're doing it to try to build his confidence. The problem I had with is Texas was acting like, look at this cool moment. It's like, that's an own goal there.
No, this is... That is not an Alabama defender on the ground.
No.
All right. Tennessee wins 41-34 over State. Who's next? So I guess Kalen DeBoer isn't done yet.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, isn't he in the same situation that he was last year?
I just think this stuff is so much fun now. I mean, I hate it. It's just the fact that anyone can beat anyone. And then that, like, Alabama comes out, scores four of its first half possessions, even with the dropped,
literally the
dropped touchdown pass. They come back right down that same drive. They're unstoppable, right?
Yes.
And, I mean, they had 262 yards in the first half. Ty Simpson, who looked good, by the way.
Yep.
11 of 16.
No, I thought he looked good all night.
132 yards. No, he looked good all night. He looked good. 24, 38, 276 yards, two touchdowns. He certainly, to the extent there's a problem, there's no problem with Ty Simpson. He was terrific. They did get within three. And then they stuffed Cash Jones on that.
Yeah, I actually didn't have a real problem with them going for it.
No.
But I did – that play call looked like they trapped him exactly into what they wanted to do, which was, hey, we want you to give the ball to Cash Jones. Like, I just thought the play call – like, I get what they were doing. They were trying to run tempo, and they were trying to get a numbers advantage. But that's not the guy I want with the ball on when the game's on the line.
So the stat that you've, I'm sure, seen is Georgia 91-8. Against every team that is not Alabama.
Yep.
And over the same time, 1-7 versus the Tide.
And this time they got him at home. This wasn't a game in Atlanta. This wasn't a game. This was at home.
Kalen DeBoer, 6-1 versus the AP top 10. 6-1 versus the AP top 10. Something like 4-4 whatever against other
SEC. Yeah. It's like, this isn't the game. I've not had a problem with him.
Loses to Oklahoma, loses to Vandy.
Right.
But my God, when he's got a top 10 team.
Correct.
He beats him.
And that's what he did. That's what he did at Washington. Like in the big games, they would show up. I think the thing that was interesting to me about this game is it actually felt very similar to the Georgia game last year, except the game just didn't get out of control. But
right. Basically,
they sat there and said they put up 24 points in the first half, and they're like,
"They said that's enough.
Come get us."
Yep.
And by the way, like it was close, but it worked.
So they got Vandy next. We're not playing Vandy's fight song because of the opposition, but I could pay Diego Pavia's fight song.
Well, they didn't cover.
He was unbelievable. 404 total yards, 6 touchdowns.
Yes.
He was unbelievable. So,
I mean, they're basically in the same spot they're in last year, except they get the game at home, but it's this massive win against Georgia, and then here comes Vanderbilt.
But there's more respect for Vanderbilt this year.
Correct. And Vanderbilt's better than they were last year.
And Vanderbilt's better. And we like, it's not going to be so, you know, it will be humiliating for Alabama, but it's not humiliating to lose to this Vanderbilt team.
No, it's just humiliating from a jersey and helmet perspective.
Yes, it is from a jersey and helmet perspective. All right. In terms of other games in the SEC that we will not get to or other teams that deserve, well, here, let's play our last team that deserves to be celebrated. Have we ever played Virginia's fight song?
We had it in the system, so I didn't have to get it this morning.
46-38. Florida State had to, you know, fourth and goal touchdown pass with 30 seconds left to go to tie it up. At that point, I did wonder if Norvell was going to go for two.
I thought he might too, just because of how. Like
at that point, you're rolling. But I think in the end, he thought we have the better team.
Well, and I also think he was, you know, hey, they tried to run it in, and they didn't do it. And so I think the idea is, man, I don't really want Tommy Castellanos with, like, one throw to end the game. Like, I think it was like, all right, let's see if we can get a stop on defense.
For Virginia, it was their last home win versus the first home win since a top five team. Last time they did it was 2005, 20 years ago. Also Florida State. And then we had the field rushing and we had the mayhem, the Florida State receiver who was run over, 17 people treated for injuries. Your thoughts on the field storming?
I mean, again, you never want to see anyone get hurt, but like if we're talking about visual, that's how you storm the field. I mean, ball went through
that's
the
where you're going
like
with
the
this?
Ball was incomplete, well and it was just like you're a going, mad like that storm in the field.
You're going with well done.
Yeah,
that's your take.
That was an elite
injuries,
field storming.
Mayhem everywhere. Player run over. I don't know what you can do. That's the question. What can you do in that circumstance?
I don't know.
Other than like German shepherds, like a.
Yeah, I think there's also this idea of we act like we want to do stuff, and then we'll be replaying the video and footage of this for like years and years and years and years and years to come.
It was a hell of a field storming. And what does this do for Mike Norvell and Florida State?
Well, it makes this week basically must win. The thing that was interesting to me about this game from the UVA side.
It feels like college football is only getting better.
It's certainly getting more interesting.
Because it's a wider range of teams that are involved.
Right, but everybody hasn't adjusted yet.
And everybody's got good players.
Well, there's more good players spread out. The good players are not consolidated like in one mega Death Star. But the thing about this UVA game is, Jeff, like other than like the start, which the start was awesome, you know, they jump up on them, the crowd's going nuts and whatnot. But like if you're doing the anatomy of an upset, they did not exactly do that. They're turning it over.
Oh, no, like, not at all.
They're like letting Florida State back in, and then they just kind of made one more play, and then obviously the drop, the bobble. He had 10 yards to catch the football and couldn't do it.
We only celebrate five teams, and so therefore we're not celebrating Illinois, but we certainly could. We are not celebrating Arizona State, but we certainly could. We are not celebrating Ohio State, but we certainly could. Any others you want to throw in there?
We could blow up another team, but...
Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. Who are we blowing up? I mean...
You know what the funny part of this one was?
There's no shame in losing to Oregon.
Well...
Do they really deserve to be blown up?
If the fourth quarter didn't happen, I think yes.
But then, two brilliant touchdown drives.
Like, this isn't, like, of all the James Franklin games, to sit there and point and laugh, I don't really feel like this was the one.
I'm only blowing them up because, right? I mean, just because it's another, right? Because it's another. Honestly, they look like they're going to win the damn thing. You know, with the two touchdowns to
I mean, the whole time in the fourth quarter,
scoring.
The whole time in the fourth quarter, it's like, what were you waiting on?
Well, and that is, by the way, a trend.
Yes.
That is a trend. They like, oh, now you're going to start playing.
Correct. We thought we could dominate and whatnot. It's like, you probably needed to score.
This would look like it was going to be around 17-3. And at one point, the yardage, when it was 17-3, 352 yards to 109 yards. Yards per play, 5.9 to 2.9. It's like Penn State's coming up flat, empty. James Franklin is James Franklin. He is, and then they come back, and all of a sudden becomes absolutely thrilling. Oregon has to convert that fourth down. Dante Moore's terrific. And then you have the Dante Moore touchdown pass and the pick to end it.
Well, and then I thought another big play was like in the first overtime. I think it was like second and 4 or 5, and Dante Moore bobbles the mesh point, the exchange, but it just bounced right back to him.
So you have two different coaching stats here. The one I'm sure you know is that James Franklin now 1-18 against Big Ten teams in the top 10.
Yeah, but that's mainly a Michigan and Ohio State stat.
Ohio State, mainly. And then Dan Lanning. Now, mind you, this doesn't count the playoff.
Yep.
He is 12-0 against the Big Ten.
Yes, and this was a first big road win.
Massive win for
like
Oregon.
Going on the road.
Are they the best team in the country?
I think the best team might still be in Miami, but I definitely think I don't think you can dismiss Oregon. Like they deserve to be. If you're gonna say the nominees are, they deserve to be nominated.
And is Dante Moore your Heisman leader?
I think, but that's the other thing about this year. Doesn't even feel like the Heisman's wide open.
Oh, totally. Just let's see what happens next week.
Yeah,
I mean, that's 100%. It feels like is let's see what happens next week. So I feel bad blowing up Penn State because it was in the end they gave us a fun game, fun ending. They got off the mat in the fourth quarter, and they're not dead. And so we shall see. If we were going to blow up other teams, we could certainly have blown up Arkansas for the 56-13. But they, you know, whatever. They've made the change. They did what they very clearly thought they had to do. Do you want to celebrate A&M or do you want to blow up Auburn? And the problem with Auburn is that what do you do with this? Like, you're not getting blown out. You're playing credibly now 2 weeks in a row, and yet.
Well, your defense played credibly.
Okay, your defense played incredibly. But what do you do with it?
They went 0-13 on third downs.
Okay, that's not good.
Like.
I thought he was an offensive genius.
He believes he is.
I thought.
Only they would just do what he called.
I thought he was an offensive genius. So you would be more inclined to blow up Auburn than to celebrate? Because it is amazing. Like, if you were Auburn, and I'm reading off those SEC title odds, right? And there are 10 teams between 16.3% and 5.2%, and you're not one of the 10?
Well, but you're in the reality of you're 0-2.
Oh, I know you're not. But that's
Oh, I know.
That's not where as an Auburn might be willing to concede. Okay, we're not right now Georgia, and we're not right now Alabama, and maybe we would. But if there's 10 teams that are listed with odds between 5 and 16% to win a title, we should be one of the 10.
And that's what they paid for.
That's what we're paying for.
Correct.
Is to certainly be one of the 10. We want to be one of the six best teams in the S. We want to be better than Ole Miss.
They should have gotten the deal
done.
We want
to be better than Missouri.
Well, they should have gotten the deal done and made
for God's
and
sakes,
get Kiffin.
We want to be better than Vanderbilt.
Yeah. Now, they still have the opportunity to play all those teams. Like, yes, that's the other thing. I think that defense is good. But, like, this is kind of what it really boiled down to, Jeff. It's like you're watching that game, and I want to be clear. I'm not, like, ragging on A&M. A&M was in the position of, hey, if your opponent's going to beat itself, let them. And so they just kind of stayed the course and like, all right, well, you can't score twice. And they were right.
Skarbinski, this was just sent to me. So Skarbinski tweeted out, Hugh Freeze almost halfway through year three. 14-6 overall, 5-13 against the SEC.
You mean 14-16?
Yeah, 14-16 overall. 5-13 against the SEC. 1-10 versus ranked teams. 0-6 against ranked teams on the road. In the 16 losses, again, they're 14-16. In their 16 losses, this is really horrifying. They have averaged 15.2 points.
Yeah, and the offense has looked inept. I think also there's
that
another.
That is inept.
Hang on, let me pull up. I want to quickly. I think he's also like one in a lot
God.
In one
in
score
16
games.
16 losses, averaged 15.2 points per game.
Yep.
That is. That is horrifying. So, all right, we got to take a break. We do have to take a break. Before I do that, I'll tell you that if you're selling your house, Josh Hysaw would be the person to call. Josh and the team at Keller Williams Realty. It's a tricky market. I'm telling you, it's a tricky market. We're looking around, and we see the same houses on out there all the time. Like, they're all out there. Like a house that I saw a year ago, still there. And so you might be tempted to do the whole, you know what? I'll take a cash offer, and you'll get in these robocalls that are offering you cash offers, and don't do that. They're calling from out of town. They're going to lowball you. They're just trying to get your house really cheap so they can flip it. Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams really have a different philosophy. They're here in the Mid-South, and so if you get in contact with them, Josh has thebuyers.com. Josh will come out to your house. He'll tell you what it's worth, and he'll give you a full price market offer for your home. And then you get 4 months to turn over the keys. So you don't have to do, you know, open houses. You don't have to do, pour money into fixing it up, any of that. Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty are there for you to help make this transition easy. Again, to get in touch, it's joshhasthebuyers.com. Chris Harrington, it's Grizzlies Media Day on top of everything else. Chris Harrington joins us to talk about that. Coming up next, it is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.